Today is Thursday, September the 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Coming up, 20 people have died after a truck packed with explosives was detonated by Taliban militants outside a hospital in southern Afghanistan. Also ahead, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu voices disappointment at his election challenger's rejection of his offer to discuss forming a unity government. A new poll shows Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren surging into second place in the Democratic presidential race. Those stories and more coming up next. Officials in Afghanistan say that a U.S. drone strike intended to hit an Islamic State hideout in Afghanistan's eastern Nangarhar province killed at least 30 civilians. The attack Wednesday night is reported to have injured 40 people after accidentally hitting farmers and laborers. Afghanistan's defense ministry and a senior U.S. official in Kabul confirmed the drone strike, but did not share details of civilian casualties. A spokesman for U.S. forces in Afghanistan said he was aware of reports that non-combatants died and was working with local officials to determine the facts. And on Thursday, a powerful early morning suicide truck bomb devastated a hospital in southern Afghanistan. The massive explosion destroyed part of the hospital in Kalat, the capital of southern Zabul province, and left a fleet of ambulances broken and battered. The Taliban, who claimed responsibility for the bombing, have carried out nearly daily attacks since peace talks with the United States collapsed earlier this month. Survivors, many of whom had come to see their sick family members, used shawls and blankets to carry the wounded inside the destroyed buildings, while authorities scrambled to take the worst of the wounded to hospitals in nearby Kandahar. The victim of the attack told Reuters that there are many civilians who were martyred and wounded, and you can't see even one military officer among them. In the hours after the explosion, there were contradictory figures of the dead and wounded. The provincial governor's spokesman put the death toll at 12, but said authorities were on the scene sifting through the debris. The head of the provincial council, meanwhile, put the death toll at 20.
Saudi TV showed Secretary of State Pompeo arriving at Jeddah Airport late Wednesday afternoon.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met Wednesday with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in the Saudi Red Sea port city of Jeddah, insisting that Iran was behind the attacks on Saudi oil installations in the country's eastern province Saturday and not Yemeni's Houthis. The secretary on Thursday is in the United Arab Emirates to meet UAE Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed. Edward Yeranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Saudi TV showed Secretary of State Pompeo arriving at Jeddah Airport late Wednesday afternoon before meeting with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to discuss Saturday's attack on Saudi oil installations. Pompeo said Iran is behind the attacks and not Yemen's Houthis. Saudi Defense Ministry spokesman Colonel Turki al-Maliki told journalists at a press conference earlier that 18 drones and 7 cruise missiles hit the 2 Saudi oil facilities, and that the missiles, 3 of which fell short of their targets, came from the north and could not have been launched by the Houthis.
This attack did not originate from Yemen, despite Iran's best effort to make it appear so. Their collaboration with their proxy in the region to create this false narrative is clear. Secondly, the attack was launched from the north and was unquestionably sponsored by Iran.
Maliki says Riyadh has invited UN investigators to examine the evidence about who launched the attack and to take action. He stopped short of saying the cruise missiles were launched from Iranian territory, despite accusing Tehran of being behind the attacks. Maliki also showed photos of the three Iranian missiles that missed their targets. Earlier Wednesday, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani denied that Tehran was responsible for the attacks on Saudi oil facilities. Late Tuesday, he told journalists in Ankara that Yemen's Houthis launched the attack in self-defense, responding to daily Saudi attacks on their country. He claims the Yemeni people have been forced to respond to what he calls the flood of weapons the U.S. and Europe are sending to Saudi Arabia and the UAE, so they must use legitimate resistance to stop the destruction of their country and Saudi aggression on Yemen. U.S. President Donald Trump instructed Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin in a tweet Wednesday to substantially increase sanctions on the country of Iran. Trump did not specify, however, what those sanctions would be. Saudi media reported Russian President Vladimir Putin told Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman he supported a complete and impartial investigation. Putin also reportedly offered to sell Riyadh Russian air defense systems on Tuesday. Saudi oil minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman told journalists Tuesday that repairs to the damaged Saudi oil facilities were moving swiftly and that much of the country's oil production is back online. He says that with the help of God, we've been able to contain the damage during the past 2 days and restore more than half of the production that was taken offline during this terrorist attack. Tuesday, Vice President Mike Pence told a conference at the American Enterprise Institute that the U.S. doesn't want war with anybody, but that the United States is prepared. We're locked and loaded, and we're ready to defend our interests and our allies in the region. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Meanwhile, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said Thursday that any U.S. or Saudi military strikes against his country would result in an all-out war. Zarif also said that the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, was trying to delay issuing visas for the Iranian delegation to the United Nations General Assembly next week. With no clear winner in Israel's national election, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has called on his main challenger, Benny Gantz, to join him in forming a unity government. Gantz of the centrist Blue and White Party rebuffed the call, saying that he would not join a unity government as long as Netanyahu remains head of the Likud party. Gantz says in Hebrew he wants to lead a broad and liberal unity government. An official in Netanyahu's office says that the Israel leader will not be attending this year's United Nations General Assembly in New York, an event he ordinarily uses to advance Israeli interests on the world stage. The government's intelligence watchdog will testify about the handling of a whistleblower complaint. AB correspondent Mike Hampen reports.
The Washington Post reports Inspector General Michael Atkinson is to testify today. According to the Post, the complaint involves an intelligence official's allegation that President Trump made an unspecified promise to a foreign leader. The Post cites two anonymous former U.S. officials. However, the Associated Press has not confirmed the report. The Intelligence Committee Chairman, Congressman Adam Schiff, says Atkinson determined the whistleblower complaint was credible and urgent. Mike Hempen, Washington.
U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted today about the congressional hearings, calling it fake news and saying that he knows that when he calls foreign leaders, there will be people from U.S. agencies listening. And the tweet read, "Knowing all of this, is anybody dumb enough to believe that I would say anything inappropriate with a foreign leader while on such a potentially heavily populated call? I would only do what is always right anyway and only do good for the USA." This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers all over the world are abuzz with excitement after word that a possible second interstellar object was recently discovered in our solar system. The object was determined to be a comet, and it was discovered by Gennady Borisov on August 30, 2019, at the Margot Observatory in Crimea. NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory reports that the comet is continuing its trip toward the sun, but the JPL scientists predict that the distant traveler will only make it to a point that's a bit behind the orbit of Mars and about 300 million kilometers from Earth. While the comet has not yet been confirmed that it is of interstellar origin, it was given the designation C-2019-Q4 Borisov. The first interstellar object to visit our solar system was the mysterious and cigar-shaped Oumuamua in October 2017. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. Economic analysts say that developing economies could face disruption from the shockwaves of Britain crashing out of the European Union with no deal, while Europe, and especially Britain, will be hit hardest by a no-deal Brexit. The effects on global trading routes and supply chains could have consequences far beyond the continent, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Brexit will affect not only Britain's relations with the European Union, but also with hundreds of other countries with which Britain currently trades on EU terms. London has negotiated new post-Brexit trade arrangements with several countries, including Central American nations, Switzerland, and South Korea, among others. But that leaves hundreds of states, from smaller economies to relative giants like Japan and Canada, with whom trade would revert to World Trade Organization terms after a no-deal Brexit. And striking new trade deals won't be easy, says Anand Menon of the UK in a Changing Europe programme at King's College London.
Many countries with whom we try and do trade deals will say to us, yep, that would be great. We'd quite like to know what your relationship with the European Union is going to be before we sign anything with you, though. So all roads lead to Brussels.
Such uncertainty doesn't help countries that sell goods to Britain. Kenya exports cut flowers, fruit and vegetables, with total exports to Britain estimated at $400 million per year. Bangladesh exports almost $4 billion worth of goods to Britain, currently traded under the EU's preferential rules of origin, which allocate zero or low tariffs on goods from developing countries. A no-deal Brexit will likely mean disruption, says Max Mendez-Para of the Overseas Development Institute.
The problem is that will erode the preferences that some of these countries receive. So, for example, the advantage that a country such as Bangladesh and Cambodia have on certain products, because they have access with a lower tariff, that would be removed.
Speaking last month, the head of the Africa Development Bank, Akinwumi Adesina, warned that the combination of a no-deal Brexit and the US-China trade war were hitting African economies.
The industrial capacity has fallen significantly, and so the demand, even for products and raw materials for Africa, will only fall even further. So the effect of that could have a ripple effect on African economies as the demand for their products weaken from China.
Britain, meanwhile, is stepping up its search for new trade deals, with ministers visiting New Zealand, Australia, and Japan this week. Many of these nations' companies have huge investments in Britain and fear the chaotic fallout of a no-deal Brexit. Overall, for smaller economies, the impact is likely to be less severe.
African countries seem to be quite more relaxed, or developing countries more relaxed, except some specific countries that trade a lot with the UK about the prospect of a no deal. And this is because, well, the UK has lost over many years the sort of importance in the as a destination of exports for many of these countries.
A no deal Brexit would hit the economies of many EU states like Ireland, Germany, and the Netherlands. But analysts say it is in Britain where the impact will inevitably be felt hardest of all. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Thursday, former Prime Minister John Major accused current leader Boris Johnson of a conspicuous failure to explain why he suspended Parliament for 5 weeks as a landmark Brexit case at the Supreme Court came to a head. The UK's top court is sitting to decide whether Johnson broke the law by sending lawmakers home just weeks before the UK is due to leave the European Union on October the 31st. The court says it aims to hand down its judgment early next week. Also, the European Union and Britain announced new talks on an elusive divorce deal, even as they squabbled over whether or not the UK had brought any new ideas to the table. A Japanese court has cleared three executives of negligence over the Fukushima nuclear disaster, ending the only criminal case brought as a result of the crisis. Reuters' Julian Satterwhite has the story.
The Japanese court has cleared the only people to face criminal charges as a result of the Fukushima disaster. On Thursday, three former executives of Tokyo Electric Power were found not guilty of negligence. Outside the court, protesters expressed outrage at the verdict.
How could the court make this ruling? We cannot understand and cannot accept it. For the past 8.5 years, there were many people who were forced to evacuate from their home, their hometown, and still looking for a place to live.
The trial began more than 2 years ago. The company, also known as TEPCO, operated the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear station. A powerful earthquake and tsunami in 2011 set off meltdowns in three of the plant's six reactors. It prompted Tokyo to shut down the country's entire fleet of nuclear power stations. And the radiation in water, food and air led to more than 160,000 people fleeing from their homes. All three executives have apologised for the triple meltdown. They say, however, they could not have foreseen the disaster. Prosecutors had said the three had access to data that anticipated the risk posed by a major tsunami. But the judge ruled that to hold them responsible, the prosecuting lawyers had to prove it was possible to predict tsunamis and complete preventive measures in time. TEPCO says locating and removing Fukushima's melted fuel could take up to 40 years. The company must also soon decide what to do with more than 1 million tons of contaminated water stored at the plant. Japan's environment minister recently said he thought TEPCO will be forced to dump the water into the Pacific Ocean as it runs out of room to store it. The government is waiting on a report from an expert panel before making a final decision.
That was Julian Satterthwaite from Reuters reporting. A new poll shows Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren surging into second place in the Democratic presidential race behind former Vice President Joe Biden. The NBC News Wall Street Journal poll found Biden leading the Democratic field with 31% support, followed by Warren at 25% and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in third place at 14%. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has the latest on the Democratic primary race from Washington.
Senator Elizabeth Warren took her campaign before a large crowd in New York City, where she vowed to attack political corruption if elected president.
Corruption has broken our economy, and corruption is breaking our democracy. I know what's broken. I've got a plan to fix it. And that's why I'm running for President of the United States.
Warren has been rising in the polls for months and has emerged as a top challenger to the front runner, former Vice President Joe Biden.
Everybody knows who Donald Trump is. Even his supporter. No, everybody, even his supporters know. They have no illusions. But we got to let them know who we are.
The candidates are back on the campaign trail after last week's spirited debate in Houston. During the debate, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker urged his rivals to temper their attacks on one another.
We've got one shot to make Donald Trump a one-term president, and we cannot lose it by the way we talk about each other or demonize and degrade each other.
After three debates, Biden, Warren, and Sanders remain atop the Democratic field, says Julie Pace.
The ultimate thing that you want to know, though, out of these debates is, did anybody change their standing? And I think among those three candidates, the answer is probably not really.
So far, Biden appears to be doing just enough to hold his lead, says analyst Larry Sabato.
Joe Biden did reasonably well. I think he did better than in the first two debates. That's not to say he gave a perfect performance. He always manages to work in some odd things, like encouraging people to listen to their record players.
Sabato says Biden continues to benefit from the notion that he would be the strongest candidate to run against President Trump next year.
There's a reason why they've made a tentative choice. Democrats have clarified their entire nominating process and boiled it down to one question: who can defeat President Donald Trump? That's what they care about.
Even though Sanders and Warren are battling for second place, Warren has been the one on the rise in recent polls, notes Emory University expert Andra Gillespie.
The challenge for Sanders is that there is a viable additional option in Elizabeth Warren. And so I think what we are paying attention to now in these surveys is whether or not Elizabeth Warren's ascendance is actually coming at the expense of Bernie Sanders. And so I think that that's still an open question.
Democrats hold their next debate next month in Ohio. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau apologizes for wearing brown face makeup in 2001 after an embarrassing picture emerged less than 5 weeks before an election in which he faces a tough fight. Reuters' Ryan Brooks reports.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has apologized after a photo surfaced of him wearing brown face at a party in 2001. Trudeau spoke to reporters Wednesday after Time magazine published the image. He said he was dressed up like Aladdin for a gala where the theme was Arabian Nights.
I take responsibility for my decision to do that. I shouldn't have done it. I should have known better. It was something that I didn't think was racist at the time, but now I recognize it was something racist to do, and I am deeply sorry.
When asked if he would have told someone else to resign if they'd done this, Trudeau did not answer the question.
I think there are people who've made mistakes in this life, and you make decisions based on what they actually do, what they did, and on a case-by-case basis. I think I deeply regret that I did that. I should have known better, but I didn't.
Trudeau is currently on the campaign trail before Canadian federal elections. The image could undermine his chances for re-election with less than 5 weeks to go before polls open.
That was Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks. In Venezuela, political factions will take their power struggle to New York next week, where representatives of President Nicolas Maduro and opposition chief Juan Guaido will each try to convince a gathering of world leaders at the United Nations that their boss is the country's legitimate head of state. However, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres ruled out meeting Juan Guaido if he attends next week's General Assembly, even though he has the support of most Western and Latin American nations. More than 50 nations recognize Guaido as the interim president, but Nicolas Maduro's government still holds Venezuela's UN seat and enjoys backing from Security Council members, Russia and China. And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Rob McLean, thank you so much for listening. You'll find in-depth coverage of world events and news at the VOA News website. And don't forget, with our mobile app, you can download the stories and take them with you. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Have a great day.